All right, welcome to the weekend. I am Pia Muhlenbeck. I'm here with Kane.
Good evening.
And this is Wine Time, the show where we crack open a bottle of bubbly and suggest you do the same.
Not if you are driving. Make sure you get home first before you open that bottle.
And join us as we chat through the week that was.
Before we get started, we want to tell you guys what we are drinking today. And I'm very excited for Pia to say the word, say the name of
You want me
bottle.
To pronounce it, don't you?
Well, I've listened to her pronounce it in a awkward way three times now.
So the champagne, it's a really beautiful bottle of champagne. It's called Paul Roger.
That is not what she said a minute ago. She called it Paul Roger.
Well, that's how it reads. I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it, but
it's the official champagne of Meghan Merkel's wedding.
Yes, it is literally like,
if you care,
the royal wedding champagne. And we've cracked it open for our first ever podcast of 2020.
It's funny, I googled the alcohol brand because we're trying to work out how to say it. And when we got to the website, it literally says, this is the official champagne of Harry and Meghan. And I'm like, I'm pretty certain that was a bad sponsorship deal. You must be very annoyed now.
Yeah. So this is our first podcast back of 2020. We took a few weeks off over the holidays. Kane was a little bit sick there for a while.
I was very sick for a while.
Yes. And we have also been kind of dealing with some crazy Australian weather.
Well, we haven't been dealing with it, but we've been helping people that have been dealing with it.
Yeah.
It's been wild here.
I'm sure that if you've seen any snippets of the news, you know that Australia has had insane bushfires this season. Mm. Like, it's been going for months and months now, and there is just no sign of them slowing down or easing off, and they have just been absolutely devastating.
I think we've had a fire in Australia burning since September.
Yes.
And whilst that doesn't sound too bad if you just think, oh, an isolated fire, the amount that has burnt is 10 times the size of the Amazon rainforest burn that everyone on the planet was up in arms in last year.
Yeah.
I think at this point, actually, everyone's pretty upset about Australia burning.
Yes.
Because it's crazy. We've had a billion plus animals die.
Honestly.
By fire.
Ugh.
Like, can you imagine?
It's just the most awful thing I've ever seen.
Like, I get that people eat meat and there is a humane way to, you know, convert an animal into meat. But for these poor animals that are just running for their lives and they just burn, that is horrific.
Yeah,
it's really heartbreaking.
Horrific. And entire towns are just completely gone. People are losing houses. Mm. I think like 35 humans have died. Like, this is absolutely catastrophic.
Yeah.
And what hasn't really reached the news, you know, the international news so far, is the other weather conditions that have kind of come, I guess, like as a result of the bushfires.
Mm.
But it's been crazy. So Kane and I live in Sydney, in the middle of the city. Like, we live in a high rise, so we're not directly affected by the bushfires.
We're kind of lucky in our location because I don't think a bushfire could actually reach us.
There's
directly.
Just not enough, like, plants around really for it to burn here.
No, we're kind of secondary in terms of knock-on effects of a bushfire.
Yeah, but what we have seen this entire summer is crazy, crazy smoke pollution.
Mm.
So you go outside and you can't even see like 100 meters ahead of you. The buildings in the skyline, you can't see. You can't see the horizon. The sun is just like creating this crazy orange haze everywhere. And you haven't seen a blue sky in like months.
Yeah, if you want to have a look at it, go check our vlog. We're recording this right now and we are currently in this weird 5-day window where it's actually been really nice. However, I do know that there is worse bushfires coming. We haven't actually hit peak bushfire season yet.
Yeah.
And last week, two weeks ago, we actually got in a convoy with the Fire Relief Run and we drove in a convoy of 15, 16 cars and jeeps and just drove groceries down to areas that required our help.
Yeah.
And that was very nice to kind of be able to help out in that way. And then I got a message from Ollie, who runs Fire Relief Run, yesterday saying that the fires are back.
In the exact towns that we were in last week.
Yeah, yeah, literally. And he sent me photos and it was horrifying to see. It's one devastation after another. The fires are now causing their own weather structures.
Yeah.
So they are now causing their own lightning and thunderstorms.
I saw like a fire tornado at one point.
Yeah, very common, very common. And the fires are drying out all of the surrounding area.
Mm.
And then up in the air, they're causing these clouds, and the clouds are then causing lightning. And so when the lightning hits the ground is so dry, it's kind of hyper speeding up these fires and creating mega fires. We've had massive blazes kind of merge to create mega blazes. Yeah. We've had blazes come so close to the oceanside towns that entire towns, we're talking thousands and thousands of people, have had to just get in the ocean.
Yeah, literally.
It's the only place that there isn't fire.
Yeah, they're honestly sitting on the beach, and then this alarm goes off in their town, and basically that means, all right, everyone has to just get in the water.
Chloe's family are down in, our friend Chloe, her family are down in
Bateman's Bay.
Mm. And seeing what was happening down there, outrageous.
Well, the pollution in Sydney now is the worst in the world.
Mm. It's the equivalent of 40 cigarettes a day?
Two packs a day, I heard. It's walking, just being outside right now does as much damage to your lungs as smoking two packs of cigarettes a day.
It's crazy. Australia always gets bushfires on a yearly basis. A lot of countries do. California does.
Gets very dry here in summer.
Yeah, very dry. Mm. And there's inevitably a bushfire that happens, and it's normally controlled. Unfortunately, they're getting worse and worse. They're unprecedented. They're becoming catastrophic.
It's without a doubt a climate crisis, because it's not even just the bushfires. Like, what we're seeing right now that really hasn't been broadcast so much on media channels is in one spot there'll be fires and then 200 kilometers away, like an hour drive, there's flooding. Yeah. Crazy, crazy flooding.
Well, that is because of the weather patterns that the actual intensity of the fire is creating.
Yeah. Then what was happening is last week we actually got some rain and everyone was super excited about it because it's been a few months since we've had like a decent downpour of rain. So, you know, I even posted a story of me outside like dancing in the rain. Everyone is excited because the rain was obviously going to help extinguish some of these fires a little bit. And what happened then is because there was so much smoke and pollution in the sky, the rain was ash rain.
I think the rain was attaching itself to the smoke in the ash in the air.
Yeah.
And bringing it down. Like Thunderbird 1, our car is black.
Yes. Everything that's outside is covered in this ash rain.
Mm.
And it was causing these huge, like, sludgy mudslides, which were going into the waterways. And then what I saw, the next thing I saw, was hundreds of thousands of fish washing up ashore dead because of all the ash raining into the waterways.
Yeah, it's a real shame. We have a real wildlife crisis here in Australia, and Australia is such a vibrant country for wildlife. It's really quite painful to watch.
Mm.
But saying that, I want to turn this around to a positive. If you are in Australia, or even if you're not in Australia, really, and you want to kind of help, do join our Supporting Australia Facebook group. All of these small towns, which really rely on tourism, have taken a massive hit.
Yeah.
Huge hit. And if you know Pia and I from social media and from primarily from YouTube, you know that we are travel vloggers and bloggers. So our job is to go to really cool locations around the world, create cool videos about those places, and put them on YouTube for you guys to see, and then maybe you'll book some holidays there.
Mm.
So what we've decided to do this year is kind of cut back on our international travel quite significantly, to be honest. We'll put this more in the YouTube video, but just to give you a quick overview, we're going to cut back on our international travel and really focus on the towns that used to thrive on tourism that are now rebuilding.
We've wanted to do this for a couple of years and actually drive around the coast of Australia, because Australia is absolutely beautiful. You've got mountains and wineries and rainforests, and then you've got, you know, these beautiful reefs and water and island and everything. So you've got so many different things that you can showcase in a vlog.
Yeah.
So for us, this year, we're really going to focus on traveling through Australia and actually showing all the different places that you can go. And honestly, we want to encourage you guys, if you've got a holiday coming up, like rather than going overseas, go somewhere in Australia, even if it's a different place that you've never been, go somewhere that you can go and support and, you know, find the places that really need that little influx of tourism and see what you can do. So it's going to be just as fun, really.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Australia is the best place in the world. Originally, when we got the car, because our car's electric, we were going to drive around the whole circumference of Australia and tour the whole country. But at the time, there weren't enough superchargers. So we kind of got nixed with that idea. But now, 1 year later, there are so many superchargers.
Are there enough now, to get all the way around Australia?
Yeah, more than, like, Way more than enough.
How long will it take? Do you know?
I think we could do it. If we didn't stop, it would take 22 days. But like, let's make it last, you know, a lot longer than that and really spend time in all the places. And that's what we're planning on doing. Mm. But before we do that, and this is why we're talking about this right now, we're actually going to be going down to a number of areas that have been really affected. So if you are in Australia and you want to come along and help, like for example, we're going to go down to Kangaroo Island in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Because what's happened is 75% of that island is gone. 75, right? Which is approximately 35,000 koalas have been burnt alive. There's only like 7,000 left. No. And apparently they're the only subspecies of koala in Australia that doesn't have chlamydia. So yeah. they were like a real special niche clean species of koala.
Yeah.
So we're going to go down with a group of people with the RSPCA and take a load of food because with the fire, all the eucalyptus trees got burnt. So there's no food.
So even the surviving koalas, they don't have like a habitat to rely on now. They're kind of displaced. They don't have any eucalyptus to eat. They basically need to be rescued.
So the second wave of disaster we're now experiencing is the wildlife is now dying of starvation.
Yeah.
Which is horrific. So we're going to go down there. And if you want to come, please feel free. We'll link it in the description down below. We're going to drive down there. I don't know how much it's going to cost, but you know, it's worth it, right?
Mm.
We're going to go down there and the only thing I will say is it is going to be a little bit distressing because you will come across a lot of animals that were affected, but I think it's for a good cause. Then moving forward with that, we've actually, we're in the middle of just working out the final bits. We're going to partner with a coach company, which is going to drive from Sydney initially to the towns within like a 4 to 5 hour radius of Sydney that were really badly affected. And we're going to go down with empty bags and full wallets. So rather than buying your alcohol from your local, you know, bottle shop,
we'll go buy like food, drinks, anything, clothing, anything that they're selling, but from like local boutiques, not like obviously big chains or whatnot, but like the local shops there, and just go spend some money there to just pump a little bit of cash back into their, you know, environment.
We've got to stimulate the economy for more than one reason, but one of the main reasons is because a lot of money has been donated to Australia over the last few weeks, which is great, like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah. I saw that everyone is up in arms about the Red Cross all of a sudden.
Yeah. Now, the issue with the Red Cross, I actually got a letter from them and I was kind of trying to dig deep into the actual facts rather than sometimes the fiction that gets kind of spread over social media.
Yeah. They've been given or they've had a donation worth $100 million.
Yeah, 110.
And so far they've only distributed 30 million.
Yeah. Now, the kind of the way that that's kind of expanded across social media is that the Red Cross are only donating 30% of the funds.
Yeah.
And that the Red Cross keeps 70%. That's inaccurate.
Right.
The Red Cross don't. And I think the number is 91. I'll double check that. If I'm wrong, I'll put that in the description.
So 91% of donations actually go to the, you know,
to the victims.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what the Red Cross are doing is a strategic distribution plan, which isn't what everyone wants. I get that.
Yeah.
What's happening with the money is that they are allocating out about $1 million a day right now.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put this in perspective for everyone. I know that I've got a lot of people listening to the podcast today that are a bit angry about this. So I just want to put it in your mind. If you're listening right now, just think about this. If you had $110 million of donations, let's assume the Red Cross take 10, 20%, call it $90 million, right? If you had $90 million to distribute to a load of victims that have suffered in 150 different locations across a country that is as big as America, where do you do it? It's very hard to spend $100 million correctly.
Yeah.
Celeste Barber did the Facebook thing. She raised $51 million. Amazing.
Incredible.
Facebook typically, I know that they've made an exception this time, but typically the Facebook fundraiser using PayPal Giving is a 90-day payout.
Yeah.
So if you make the money today, they're not getting it until like what, April now?
Yeah.
So there's bureaucracy, there's red tape, there are timelines.
There's trust funds.
Trust funds. Also, you've got to make sure that it's not fraudulent. So when there's that much money at play, the banks are checking stuff, government are checking stuff. There's a lot of hoops you got to jump through.
And at the end of the day, the Red Cross have to pay their staff. I think there's like 30,000 people employed by them.
I think
so. And you can't run an organization that big and rely on volunteers.
No.
So I understand if they say 91% of all donations actually go to the victims, if they're running all of those costs and all of the staff salaries and everything on 9% of that, I think that's pretty decent.
Yeah, well, I think the bigger issue came from the fact that people found out that the CEO makes about $1 million a year.
Yeah, maybe working at a charity, you shouldn't be taking a huge salary, but you're right. Like, whoever's the CEO and managing 30,000 people, they've probably come
from... Is it definitely 30,000?
I think it's around that.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do that even if you paid me $100 million. It would be too much stress. I think it takes a certain sort of person to be a CEO that can run a corporation, because it is a corporation, let's be honest. Yeah. I know it's a charity, but also at that point, you're dealing with, you know, superannuation, pension funds, sick leave,
it
all that sort of stuff.
It takes a huge level of skills. Mm. Yeah, this person's probably been a CEO of some other, like, enormous corporation before this.
For
and
sure.
Probably took a massive salary cut.
Yep.
So, like, whilst it is a charity, I don't super agree with taking a huge salary there.
Well, I mean, to put it in perspective, nearly every influencer I know in Los Angeles makes more than $1 million a year.
Yeah.
So, yes, it is a lot.
And
of
has
money.
Literally no responsibilities.
Literally, they have an Instagram husband.
Yeah.
So, I get it. It is an extortionate amount of money.
Yeah.
But also, put it in perspective, level of responsibility.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a very difficult one, and the Red Cross are paying out $1 million a day. Mm. Now, if you ask me as an idiot to pay out $1 million a day to the right person who needed it, it would take me more than a day to research the whole situation
and figure out where to distribute those funds.
So,
yeah.
So I get it. Like, it is a difficult situation.
Also, their trust might not even allow them to take out more than that per day.
I mean, you'd hope that as a charity that deals with disasters on a daily basis, it would, but I agree. I think you're right.
Yeah. But there's red tape around these things a lot of the time that we're not super aware of.
I just Googled how much the Red Cross take, and The Guardian, who, to be perfectly honest, are my most trusted news source because they're
independent.
I feel that they're kind of unbiased. The top article says the Australian Red Cross defend spending 10% of donations on office costs. I think that's okay. I don't know. I don't know how.
Honestly, I think as far as charities go, that's probably one of the best. I've heard of other charities that have like 30% of what you give them actually goes to the victims. Mm. So I do think they're one of the best ones.
I've heard a lot of misinformation going around saying that people are up in arms because the Red Cross are only giving away 30%. Mm. And I think that number has come from the fact that in the last 30 days, they've given away 30 mil out of the 100 mil.
Yeah, but that's also because we're only just at the start of the bushfire season and they're holding it back so that they can be prepared for what's to come.
Well, that's the other thing.
Because these fires aren't extinguished yet. It's not all about relief and rebuilding right now.
No.
Like, they're still going. They're still continuing fires.
This is the bigger issue that I have with regards to the whole climate emergency and the climate change, right? Because we are not in peak bushfire timelines right now.
Yeah.
That starts next month.
Mm.
Yet the level that we're getting bushfires are up in the category of catastrophic.
Yes.
Like, they are the absolute worst and we haven't got there yet.
What I'm seeing from this is that it's really awakening people's passion about the climate crisis. Like,
yeah.
Kane and I went to a protest the other day, and essentially there were these protests all around Australia and every capital city, every major city.
Mm.
And there were hundreds of thousands of people who turned up and were crazy passionate about changing the systemic environment that we have built that is just absolutely killing our planet. I feel like we sort of had to hit rock bottom in order for everyone to wake up and pay attention and actually make a change.
So sometimes there is a saying that, you know, sometimes it does take a crisis to bring everyone together.
Yeah.
And I think we've kind of seen that in America with Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump has been so polarizing and has antagonized so many people, and primarily antagonized the non-voters in America.
Yeah.
That I'm pretty confident the 2020 election, I think there's an election this year,
yeah.
whenever it is, yeah. I reckon they're going to get the best turnout ever.
Yeah, although because all of a sudden people are interested in politics and they want to contribute.
I think the same thing is happening on a global scale with the climate emergency. We're seeing this definite trend of certain brands are very invested for certain reasons. For example, Fox are very invested in coal.
Yes.
You know, their owner has investments in both. So it does make sense that the Fox networks don't kind of push the climate problem as much as they should.
No.
We're seeing this next wave of people, and it's generally the younger kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Coming up.
That's what I noticed
at
the protest. It's like, it's quite young people. Like, it's definitely the defining issue of our generation. It's something that we have to deal with, is how to change literally everything that we've done. Now it's becoming very evident that we can't keep going like this.
No, I agree. And like even like Pia and I have had some quite serious discussions over the last few weeks about things that we typically do in our day-to-day lives and how we could probably change them, or we should probably change them.
Yeah.
You know, everyone can do a bit better. And I think there's this big argument that unless you're a vegan that uses solar power, that doesn't use soap, that, you know, all this sort of kind of like the perfect human that doesn't harm the planet, you're not doing enough.
If you look at it from such a huge perspective, like, oh, everything about your life has to change, then people just completely turn a blind eye and go, oh, too hard basket, right? But what Kane and I are talking about is like some small things that we're kind of committing to for 2020 and beyond. And these are, we're going to make a whole video about like little things that we can change in our lifestyle just to make a huge impact. And if everybody did some small things, the actual overall impact on planet Earth would be incredible.
So for example, in Australia is the number one or the number two coal exporter, the coal producer in the world.
Yeah.
However, it took 2 minutes last year for me to call up my energy provider and say, I don't want fossil fuel power, I want solar.
Yeah.
And all of our properties are now powered by solar.
Yeah.
Literally took me 2 minutes. That's something everyone can do who's listening to this podcast right now and make a change. And if they do that, let me tell you, supply and demand will control businesses way more than us standing there with a sign.
Yeah.
If everybody says, actually, I want to buy a Tesla, Mercedes-Benz are going to make an electric car.
Exactly.
If everybody says, I want solar to power my house, the people that are making coal power are going to go out of business.
Exactly. Right? So money talks
and bullshit walks. And that is the bottom line.
We need to make decisions as consumers, and that's what's going to drive change.
Exactly.
Did you see that Meghan Markle and Prince Harry have decided to walk away from their responsibilities as royals?
Yes, I did. And I put that in the category that I like to lovingly refer to as, I don't care.
You don't care, do you?
I don't get
You're
it.
English, you should care.
I just don't understand. I don't understand how anyone can give two hoots about anyone they've never met. I just don't care.
But
I'm the biggest Prince fan in the world, right? Not Prince Royal thing. Prince.
That's a confusing example.
Sorry.
I'm Prince the musician.
I'm the biggest, the artist formerly known as Prince fan. When he died, I was like, that's a bummer. I'm not going to see him in concert again. Oh, well, what's for breakfast?
I think a lot of people care about this whole Meghan and Harry thing.
I know, it's weird.
Well, I've seen them all, like all the British correspondents on the news and things like that. They are all about like 75 years old. So I think it's definitely like a, you know, an older...
It might be a generational thing.
Yeah.
Every one of those commentators I see on the news who are like, have got an opinion about the royals, I bet you any money if you snuck into their house at nighttime, they've got plates and you know, the plates that have got the photo of Princess Diana's wedding.
Like royal china.
Royal china. Like who is doing that? What person?
Then the plates on the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What person is buying plates? I mean, firstly, who's putting plates on walls? Plates are for food.
Yeah.
And then who's putting plates on walls that have photos of people they've never met?
Well, you know, fans of the royal family, I guess. I think there's a certain romance to it. Like there's kind of like there's this nod to tradition, right? The fact that the monarchy still exists is quite neat.
It's not Fiona from Shrek. It's just a random actress from America.
Yeah, no, it's not Fiona from Shrek, babe. It's Meghan Markle.
That's the only princess.
Duchess of Sussex.
It's the only princess-based reference I know.
But I think what they've done is actually incredibly brave, to be quite honest. Like when I think about her life beforehand, she was an independent woman. She was an empowered woman. She had a great career. She was, you know, the lead actress on Suits, which is a mega hit show.
Oh, wow.
She probably had like, no, but like think about it. She probably had a fantastic lifestyle. Every choice she made was her choice. How she spent her time, her money, all that sort of stuff was her decision.
According to Google, she was worth $5 million, which means if she bought a New York apartment, she would have been broke. So I think that joining the royal family was a real godsend for her.
No, are you kidding me? You join the royal family and you're in shackles. All of a sudden, your husband's grandma decides your daily schedule.
No.
And every single move you make, every decision you make is not only scrutinized by the royal family, but by everyone. It's like everyone was bullying her.
Yeah, she was getting a lot of bullying. I get that. And I would agree with what you're saying if she was in her 20s. But in my research for this podcast, I found out she's 38.
Yes.
She knew what she was signing up for.
I don't think she knew just how backward and harsh people were, because people were bullying her not only for not being of English bloodline or like royal bloodline or
yeah,
whatnot.
I think the royal fans want her to be an English girl.
And also white.
Yes.
It was racist. Like, the general public became absolutely crazy in bullying her for being mixed race.
So I definitely don't defend bullying, and I definitely don't defend racism, because I've been victim of both. But I do also argue that she is a 38-year-old woman who would have had chance to back out beforehand, right? It wasn't okay. Like all this stuff happened to her the day that she put the ring on her finger in the church. She knew this was coming for her whole courtship. And also, she signed up for it.
Yeah, but she loves him. It means they actually love each other. Like, she wasn't signing up to be, you know, Fiona from Shrek.
Of course she
wasn't signing up to be a princess. She had everything going for her anyway. She obviously just fell in love.
Have you seen what he looks like? Harry.
Prince Harry.
Yeah. Do you think that she fell in love with him or his title?
I don't think she, given the current acts, I don't think she cares about the title at all. Do you know the term Meghan Markling has now been turned into a verb?
What does it mean?
Like, basically, Meghan Markle, a verb, past tense, I Meghan Markled. It means to value yourself and your mental health enough to up and leave a situation which your authentic self is not welcomed.
Okay, look, I'm with you on the whole mental health thing.
Mm.
I agree, it's very smart.
Why go through all this? Like, why live, you know, such a stunted life? If you could be a free person.
You're using words that I don't agree with. I don't think that she's living a stunted life.
I think it was
a life that she wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
But also, I agree, you shouldn't have to unnecessarily subject yourself to the mental abuse that she would have got. I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
But my argument is not that she should have stayed. My argument is, I feel like she would have known she's walking into it from the get-go.
I don't know. I think a lot of people really romanticize the idea of fame and fortune and don't actually realize what that means.
Yeah,
like,
I think so.
I don't think they realize the day-to-day of not being able to go anywhere, not being able to go shopping, not being able to go on a holiday or a vacation and, you know, sit on a beach and drink a pina colada ever for the rest of your life.
Well, I think there's a lot of girls out there who, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not a girl, but I think there's a lot of girls out there whose dream from like age 5 is to get the wedding dress on, have that fairy tale wedding. And I think the only thing that's bigger than having the fairy tale wedding is having a fairy tale wedding and marrying a prince.
I do think it kind of indicates the unraveling of the monarchy, though.
I really hope not. Royalty in any country, if you met a royal prince, be it in England, in, I don't know where there's any other royal people, but Monaco maybe, yeah, Monaco, whatever,
yeah,
you would have this utmost respect for some unknown inbuilt reason. And I really like that. I don't even know where the royalty comes from in each country, but there is this inbuilt human tradition that says this is what we do.
Yeah.
So if that went, I'd be a little bit sad.
Do you know what's going to be replaced with?
What?
The Kardashians. Oh. American royalty.
I'll be honest, I did see a picture of the Kardashians at, I don't know where they were. I really try my absolute best to not pay any attention because they aggravate me so much. But I saw a photo of the whole family. I think it was like a gala of some sort. And I thought, you know what? They look pretty good as a crew.
Yeah.
They look like royalty.
Yeah, exactly. This is probably how royalty started in the first place.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Just like one rich family.
Secret. Yeah. Well, honestly, it could be. Kris Jenner's probably sitting there going, oh, this is great. If the Queen of England quits, it's me. The other thing I wanted to talk about on the podcast today was Justin Bieber.
Yes.
Another person I feel very sorry for. Another victim of fame.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
In a weird way. Because don't forget, he came from YouTube. He was the OG person that went from YouTube to become a superstar.
And he shot into crazy fame on YouTube when he was, what, like 11?
Yeah.
Like a real little kid.
YouTube channels can change your life.
Yeah. And he launched Yummy. And Kane and I have been kind of watching his marketing strategy with this, which is just utterly hilarious. First of all, Unfortunately, I don't think Justin Bieber actually likes his own song.
No way. He looks
so insecure about it.
When it plays, you can see that this look of absolute embarrassment just come across his face.
He's just like, he's getting, basically he's teaming up with YouTubers to help kind of drive views on this. And he's jumping on FaceTimes with them and everything, begging them to say that they love the song.
Well, I saw something.
And like, promise you love it, promise you love it.
He's like a really insecure 12-year-old girl, to be perfectly honest.
Which, to be quite honest, I actually think he's an incredibly talented musician. Like, I've seen him play the drums, the keyboard, the guitar.
Yeah.
He's really, really talented. And I think he's just kind of turned into this, like, teeny bopper pop icon. And so his team is probably making him create this commercial music that he's just not really like feeling.
It's definitely the team behind it. You see this so much. Like, everyone who has talent, unfortunately, becomes a victim of the machine nowadays.
Yeah.
Because there's only a few record labels left. All the record labels have merged or shut down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few people up top. It's very much like the Hollywood movie world. There's only a few people up top that are controlling stuff, and they are literally controlling the music industry based upon stats, data, and, you know, in numbers.
Well, his team's probably going, okay, well, here's your brand. Your audience is primarily 12 to 14-year-old girls.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what you're going to release.
Exactly. It's all about the data. What is he, 25, 26?
I don't know.
It's weird for him to be releasing a song for 9-year-olds. Like, it makes sense when he's 13 to be, like, singing to 9-year-olds, but at 20-something as a married man, it's weird and creepy, right?
Yeah.
But his management have clearly gone, well, hang on, your audience, checking out your stats on Instagram, your audience are still under 13, so we've got to play up to them. So he's released a song that says yummy about 45 times. And I think he's literally realizing this is not right for me. But he's unfortunately locked in, like many artists are, to a contract that probably spans up until he's 35.
Yeah.
With that guy, Scooter Braun, who's a bit of a controlling monster, if we're being honest.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, thank you, yes. And I think he's desperately embarrassed. Like, seeing the stuff that he's been doing online with other YouTubers.
Yeah.
He looks desperate.
He looks so insecure about it. But think about the pressure that's on him. Like, he must have a team of people who all are relying on this comeback song to hit the top of the Billboard charts, right?
Yeah.
And he has to do everything in his power. So what he's done, first of all, rather than just releasing one music video and song, he's made like eight or ten different music videos so that each of them garner like a few million views.
Well, each one registers as a play.
Exactly. So he's got the same song, but he's made a bunch of different videos for it. Each of these will register as a play, and his diehard fans will watch all of the videos. So if he's got one fan who watches 10 videos, that'll be 10 plays rather than one.
That's right.
And so he's kind of gaming a little bit to get to the top of the Billboard chart.
He's manipulating the whole system. He posted something on Instagram, right? He's telling his audience to create a Spotify playlist of his song over and over and over and over again. So it's not just like play it on loop, like literally create a playlist so that it registers each one as a new play. And then he literally posted this word for word. He went, play it quietly while you sleep over and over. So like in the course of someone being asleep at nighttime, that diehard fan, just by using their parents' internet, is garnering another 100 views or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
He goes, don't just put it on repeat. Make a whole playlist and refresh. And don't put it on mute. Put it on so silent that you can't hear it and just keep it playing while you sleep. That's what he's telling his like 13-year-old fans.
And diehard fans will do it.
Yeah.
But I bet you he's absolutely mortified inside, because there's a whole stream of YouTubers coming out just exposing him, going, mate, if you made one good song, you wouldn't have to do this embarrassing press junket.
I know. And telling people to play the song while they're asleep just to get it to the top. Like, if it was a good song, he wouldn't have to do this at all.
No, not at all.
So I just looked it up. His actual main video clip has 112 million views.
Of then Yummy?
Yes.
What?
It's working. His whole thing is working. He collabed with like David Dobrik.
But that's gone up by like 50 million this week.
Yeah, all his collabs and all his like marketing and everything. It's crazy working. But then he's got another one that's like basically an animation video that's got another 20 million views. And then he's got a whole bunch of different other videos here that each have like 2 to 5 million views.
Man.
But if you guys want to have a good laugh, go and watch the parody song by Danny Gonzalez, because it is brilliant.
He's currently our favourite YouTuber.
He's really funny.
He's great. Should we do our favourite segment?
Yes, we should.
And we all know what it's called.
Talk to me in my ears.
Correct.
Hey, Kane and Pia, this is Natasha from California. I love the podcast. Keep it up. I've got two questions. First one is for Pia. Pia, I just want to know, when you are kind of down, not being productive, or kind of in a little slump, is there like a quote or a mantra or something that you do to kind of flip your mindset to make you a little bit more productive or to kind of get your day going? And my second question is for Kane. I just got back from Disneyland and saw Star Wars Land for the first time. And Kane, I want to know if you have ever seen it.
Yes.
I'm not a huge Star Wars buff, but Star Wars Land makes me want to watch every single movie. The amount of detail that went into creating it is absolutely insane. The ride is cool. They're coming out with a new ride next month. And Kane, you should really take Pia to Disneyland. You can see Star Wars Land while you're there.
Do you work for Disney?
Love you guys. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Blessings.
Yay, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Blessings.
Okay, so I'm going to address the first question.
Yep.
Because I think we all go through these days where, you know, we're a little bit unmotivated, we can't really get much done, we get really distracted, or we're procrastinating all day. And on those days, I think the best thing that helps me is just to like really, really break down my to-dos into like tiny little granular things. I don't have like a mantra that I live by, but what I find is to just sit down, make a to-do list. And it can seem really overwhelming sometimes because, you know, we all overload way too many to-dos into each day. But what I find is once I get like one tiny little thing achieved, then I start to feel kind of more productive and I want to do more. So if it's like a huge task, I break it down into these tiny little granular things and I just start on those. So that is kind of the way that I deal. I'm really big about lists and just ticking things off. It makes me feel super productive. And that's how I get my day started.
We use an app called Basecamp, which is great because it's our to-do list, but it's a group based to-do list. So we are able to assign tasks to each other. So sometimes some of the stuff we have to do involves either both of us or other people in the team. So once like Pia's done her section, she can then assign it to me or to Christina or to whoever. And so that works really well because it means that we're all holding each other accountable as well.
Yeah. And I will even put things on there that like they don't really need to be on there just so I get the satisfaction of ticking things off. Like it will literally be like, eat breakfast. And I'll be like, done nailing today.
Oh my goodness. The way that I structure my to-dos is I give them a time allocation.
Yeah.
So I will either, when I write my to-do, it's either a 5 minute, a 15 minute, a 1 hour, or a half day.
Mm.
And what that means is, let's say, I don't mean this in a patronizing way, but let's say Pia's getting ready and she's got 15 minutes to go.
Mm.
I can look at my to-do list and there is no point in me starting the to-do that's going to take half a day because I will start it and I won't actually get anywhere with it. But if I've got 3 5-minuters,
yes,
I can go bang, bang, bang and do them, and it helps me be efficient with my time. So I get as much done in the correct time that I have available. And that is so key. In terms of Star Wars Land, I have seen it. We were planning on going and I can't remember why we didn't, but something happened. It is top of my agenda. And if I don't...
You haven't seen it in person.
Oh, no. You're
aware of its existence, but you haven't actually been there.
I'm really keen to go.
He's so jealous.
Oh, I know what was going to happen. I was going to go with my friend Jonathan from the UK and we were going to go around the time that The Rise of Skywalker came out.
Yeah.
But he'd already got tickets to see the premiere in London with his brother. And so I didn't want to go on my own and Pia had other stuff on. So as it happened, we put it on a bit of a delay. But it is top of my agenda and I really, really, really hope that Disney are listening and they're going to take me.
We'll go there this year, baby.
Hey, Pia and Kane. This is Nadira speaking. I'm Indonesian living in Amsterdam. I've started watching your YouTube since forever, so I feel like I know you guys. Just want to say a few things that you truly spread good vibes. You both are really the ambassador of Australia.
Oh.
And thanks a lot for teaching us, especially to Kane, a lot of your design and photography terms like B-roll, cinematic. I have two questions for you guys. Firstly, for Pia, it's been really motivating to see how strict you and Kane go to the gym on a daily basis. But is it in your agenda in the near future to create like fitness or health plan? I think a lot of people would be really interested in that. Secondly, for the both of you, how do you guys prepare yourselves before presenting or speaking to your clients or important people? I still seem to get nervous. So thank you both, and hope to see you in Amsterdam.
Did she call us the ambassadors of Australia?
That's so lovely.
That's pretty close to the king and queen.
You're such an idiot.
Like, we're talking about Meghan Markle and a now empty position. I'm down.
You're down.
Yeah, I'll do that.
I don't think so. Oh, that's so lovely. Thank you so much. Do you want to take the question first or shall I?
What was my question again? I forgot.
My question was about the fitness routines.
Oh, I definitely am not party to that answer.
So Kane and I have made it pretty habitual to, on weekdays, at least 5 days a week, we get up and the first thing we do is go to the gym. Mm. And even if it's not like a killer hour-long session, like we at least go for half an hour and we do something to get our bodies moving.
No
and that's
way.
Just become, what are you talking about?
We've been, I've never done a half-hour session. You always make me train for like an hour. Sometimes I'm like, can we go home? You're like, no, go back to the treadmill.
That's not true. We have made it a habitual thing. When it gets tough is when we're traveling and we're not in like our normal routine and we don't have our normal like gym equipment and everything. So it's so interesting that you ask, but we are actually creating, we're literally in the middle of creating a full workout program that is non-equipment based. So you can do it from anywhere in the world. You don't have to pay for a gym membership or anything like that. So that's going to be coming out in the next, I would say in the next 4 weeks on Slinky.
Yes.
So on our label that has like activewear and swimwear and everything like that, we're creating programs on there. So I'll keep you guys posted on Instagram and YouTube, but they're going to be live soon because we have been filming them this January.
Yeah, so we had the version one of that whole kind of workout video thing on the Slinky blog.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the revised, updated, bigger, better, badder version. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah. And they're a little bit more bite-sized. So a lot of the workouts are like 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So you can either group a bunch of them into a morning or if you just want to get up and you want to do like a 10-minute quick workout just to, you know, ease into it, that's basically what we're doing. So very achievable and very travel friendly and also friendly if you're not near a gym or you don't have a gym membership.
And also we would definitely love to come to Amsterdam. The second part of that question was how do we prep speaking to important people in meetings? Mm. I'm really bad in meetings. I get very nervous.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
I mean, you're not. I didn't mean to agree there.
Yeah, you're garbage. No, thankfully I have Pia on my side all the time who is very confident talking to people. I'm good behind a camera or in front of a camera. When it comes to real life people, I do get a little bit shy and I tend to stutter a little bit. However, I have Pia on my side and also our manager, Grace, pretty much comes with us to all our meetings as well, and she's brilliant. So between my two super powerful ladies, I'm all right.
I think for me, when I prepare for a meeting, I kind of think about, you know, the ideal outcome of the meeting, like what are the objectives that you're trying to achieve? And I think it's perfectly fine to go with some notes. Like if you're doing a little bit of research about the company or the person that you've met, you can definitely go with a few notes and then go with some questions that you've got ready to go and some of the things that you want to explain about, you know, your contribution to the partnership or the business deal or whatever it may be. So for me, it's definitely just preparing, writing down some notes and knowing in your head where you're trying to get and what information you're trying to get out of the meeting. And everyone gets nervous. I know Kane said I'm like really confident speaking to people, but I think everyone gets nervous. But that really only typically only lasts for like the first couple of minutes. And then when you're in a conversation, you realize that everyone's just a person, right?
Yeah.
Like I know some people have more important positions or whatnot, but everyone's just a normal person. Well, so you can have frank and open discussions with people.
It's very hard. I know where she's coming from because it is very hard to talk to people, especially when you know that your paycheck is related to the success of that conversation.
Yeah.
And that's where I have an issue because I start to think about the outcome or beyond the outcome before I've actually kind of been able to have a sensible conversation. But, you know, it's an interesting one. I think the one thing that is definitely key is your level of preparation for the meeting is definitely related, definitely relates to the success of your delivery.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think it's fine to like sometimes pause and things like that. Like, you know, a meeting doesn't need to be like a flawless presentation on stage or anything like that. Like you can have pretty casual conversations. So at least in my experience, I think it's pretty fine.
Yeah.
To just think of people like all naked people in a room.
Don't do that. No one does that. I don't know where that came from. Yeah. Moving on to the next question.
Hey guys, my name is Ikram Huzir. I'm 18 from Morocco. Just want to say that your travel vlogs make me feel like I'm traveling with you. So I'm very thankful for that. because I'm like living the moment with you guys. So anyways, I want you guys to talk a little bit about studying. Can you give some advice and tips on how to stay motivated, to stay focused, to stop procrastinating? Because I'm asking you guys this because I know that Pia has a college degree, so you must have some experience and some advice to share. So yeah, I really hope that you visit Morocco someday. And yeah, bye, love you.
Oh, that is so lovely. We definitely want to visit Morocco. It is so high on my bucket list. We have to go there this year.
The photos
is so incredibly beautiful.
The photos I've seen of that place, I've not seen a bad pic. It looks incredible.
So, so beautiful. Okay, I have to admit, I have a degree. I can't pretend that I was like perfect at the whole studying thing.
Yeah, you were.
No,
I was there. You were very good. She would be studying until like 2 o'clock in the morning, and
that's
I'd be fast
not good.
Asleep. Oh, is that not?
Well, okay, so I was definitely one of those cramming things into the last minute kind of people with exams and, you know, assignments and things like that. I think people kind of thrive in different ways. Some people are really structured and really regimented and they need to, you know, get a head start on their assignment early. I was one of those people at uni that like left everything to the last week before it was due. And then I'd be pulling all-nighters and drinking Red Bull at 2 a.m. just to make sure that I'd get my assignment in on time.
That's not healthy.
It's not healthy. I did not have a healthy studying situation, but I was one of those people that just did really well under pressure. So for me, that kind of worked. I just knew like, okay, if I don't get this done now, I'm just totally screwed. So I have to get it done and do it well. So I know that's not the best advice there, but it's just honest, to be quite honest.
And I studied art and design, yeah, which I absolutely loved. And so I would do it all the time because it was like my hobby.
That's probably really good advice. Do something that you
do
really
something
love.
You love, and it will never. Seriously, like I would, even before and after I'd finished studying, I didn't change what I was actually doing at home. I was still in front of a computer doing stuff.
Yeah.
Like creating graphics and art and stuff like that. And I loved it, and still what I do now. So
yeah. That's really great advice. Try and find something that you love. But I'll be honest, I've become a lot more regimented like after university, now that I have a business and things like that. I now don't leave things to the last minute because I don't want to stay up till, you know, all early hours of the morning doing all my work. So yeah, there was a culture at the university that I was at that it was like, yeah, all-nighters, let's get this done. And it was just about cracking it out in a shorter time as possible.
Yeah, no, that's not probably healthy long term.
No.
Last question is from Hannah.
Hey Kane and Pia, and especially to Pia, liebe Grüße aus Deutschland.
Liebe Grüße, hallo.
I just found your podcast recently and I looked up for your profiles on social media and saw on your Instagram profile that you come from Germany, Pia. And my question is, how did you come to Australia?
Ja, ich komme aus Deutschland. Ich war 8, wenn ich nach Australien gezogen bin. Also meine ganze Familie, wenn ich 8 Jahre alt war, sind nach Australien gezogen. I'll speak in English so that everybody else can understand. But yeah, basically when I was 8 years old, my entire family moved to Australia. So like my mum, my dad, my sister. We had been coming to Australia on holidays a few years beforehand. And
but
my
you
mom,
were a kid.
When I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, before I was 8 years old.
Oh.
So, you know, my mum just absolutely fell in love with the lifestyle here. And my uncle and cousin already lived here. So sometimes we spent like a few months here living with family. And then, yeah, when I was 8 years old, my mum moved us all over to Australia. I couldn't speak a word of English at the time. I was so young that I was, you know, sort of pre-learning English at school and things like that. So they kind of just threw me into primary school and I had to figure it out. But I noticed that when you're really young as a kid, your brain is like a little sponge. So I just picked up the language quite quickly.
So you couldn't speak a word of English when you went to your first day at school?
No.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah.
It is time for Conspiracy of the Week. It's back.
Oh, it's back.
After a number of weeks of not having one. Something slid across my desk
if
today.
If this just cuts straight to the questions, it's because I haven't heard what he's about to tell us. So I'm waiting with bated breath about this conspiracy.
So this slid across my desk today.
Uh-huh. Did it slide across your desk?
I slid it to myself.
Okay.
I discovered, well, this is probably a little bit close to the mark. Grace is going to have a meltdown when she hears me say this. The coronavirus.
Yes.
The thing that is really quite problematic for a lot of the planet right now.
Yes.
Was patented in 2014.
By who?
I don't know. I didn't look that far. I just saw the patent. But it is definitely a patented disease. Not the vaccination, the disease.
So are you saying that you think it is a man-made coronavirus?
I don't know. That's where my level of my research ended.
Because what I heard is that it came from animals.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I didn't know it had been patented. Are you saying that you think there's like one person or company that's like made this virus, patented it, and is also going to make the vaccine and then sell them to everyone for $600.
I mean, you said that, not me. So
that's what your conspiracy theory is, though, right? That's where you're going with this.
I don't want to commit to anything.
It's like, who's that guy that's like a total villain?
Martin Shkreli.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who? What does he have? HIV?
I think he's either HIV or AIDS. He bought the vaccine or the anti-vax for it.
Yeah.
And then hacked the price up.
To like $800 a day or something. Like, completely something crazy. He's like a real villain.
He reminds me of Lex Luthor in Superman.
Yeah.
He's a weirdo. But yeah, I don't know. I know the coronavirus is a very touchy subject right now, especially if you have it. So if you do, I'm sorry. But that is what I read on Google today.
Fascinating.
He was just staring at me saying, don't put this in the podcast. Oh, time is up, and that's where we're going to end today's episode of Wine Time. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure you're subscribed and have hit that 5-star rating on this episode. Every little bit helps, so we really appreciate that. If you fancy keeping up with our antics outside of this podcast, you can always follow us on Instagram. The links are in this description, or you can check out our YouTube channel where we post at least 2 videos a week. If you'd like to check out our website, which has heaps of posts as well as all our photo and video presets, head over to caneandpia.com. That's www.caneandpia.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next one. We'll be right back.